Somewhere across the bifrost, way up high.
Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. My name's Sun Tzu, and joining me in a moment is my dear, albeit a little raspy co-host from across the pond, Pat Dunford. And today we have an action-packed episode. Whole lot of changes come out from Atomic Mass Games. But first, Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks, TT. Don't let my voice fool you. I am 100% full health and ready to pod.
So we are recording this on the 23rd. It is just after midnight for me, so I think it's like 7 or 8 a.m. for Pat. And the November 2021 Banned and Restricted List update came out via transmission today. You can find that at atomicmassgames.com/transmissions. And a bunch of different changes happened here, and that's kind of what we want to go over today, right, Pat?
Yeah, tons of changes. We're not going to cover them all in this single episode, right? I think there's loads to talk about over the coming weeks. One thing I would recommend for anybody that is really interested to know more about the total changes or is feeling perhaps a little bit overwhelmed with so many things changing all at once, we have a couple of excellent articles on acrossthebifrost.com, not least of which is Marvel Crisis Protocol Rules Updates, the creatively named article penned by the wonderful Nigoldar of MCP Rules Forum fame. He has created a very useful summary that explains the biggest changes and their impacts, and that's recommended reading really for anybody that wants a quick summary of everything that's happened.
Yeah, really thankful for him posting that. And then GD Nerd obviously does his first impressions, which helps keeps us up to date. But today, we're just focusing on the Banned and Restricted and the updated tactics cards. And Pat, I'm a little sad. It's the end of an era. This is the first BNR update we hadn't had the wills on for.
That's true. The first, maybe the last. I definitely would like to have them back on the show to talk about this stuff in future. So if we can corral them, we will. But obviously, they've been working on a lot of stuff right now and they didn't have time to talk to us.
Yeah, I guess we'll give them the excuse. So let's start with the changes to the banned and restricted list. For those of you who don't know, for tournament and organized play, there's a banned and restricted list. A restricted list means your roster is allowed to take two cards off of this list. A banned list means you can't take any. The banned list has been pretty small generally, but this time around we're adding two cards to it. We're adding Panic Grip City as evacuation efforts continue. And I want to apologize because due to some time traveling, Pat and I talk about that card in two episodes from now. So sorry about that. Not terribly relevant. Yeah, you remember now.
I forgot we did that. Oh my gosh.
And All You've Got has also made it onto the banned list. Let's talk about All You've Got first because I think it's a little more succinct conversation. Obviously, an incredibly powerful card. We thought it was very powerful right from the get-go. I think you and I have both used it to great success and very popular, and really it's just become kind of a ubiquitously taken card as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact it was so popular was one of the reasons for it to be considered for the banned list. That alone obviously is not a good enough reason to ban something. You don't just stop people using something because it's popular, they like using it, right? The big problem with All You've Got is how powerful it is. Honestly, I think it's just an outlier in terms of the amount of impact you get out of a team tactics card. You and I have discussed in the past many times that a good benchmark for a team tactics card is if it gives you like an action, it's worth considering. And All You've Got gave you a whole activation, which was often two or more actions worth of output. Plus, it combines so incredibly well with damage increasing effects. Right, it acted as a multiplier for things like All Webbed Up, Blind Obsession, Doom Prophecy. And so it was often giving you even more value than just the full activation that it was billed as.
Yeah, so I don't think anyone's going to, well, I guess no one on this podcast is going to complain about it being added to the banned list. I do think it's an interesting kind of meta shift for things. And maybe, should we talk about that now or should we talk about that later? Because it kind of goes hand in hand with some things that were updated as well.
Yeah, but the meta shift is really big and it's hard to pin down right now, isn't it? Because the meta will change and it will be as a result of the combination of all of these small changes. But I think you're right that all you've got is going to be one of the bigger, more impactful changes. Because as you said, every competitive team is using all you've got. It massively impacts which characters you want to play with and which characters you might want to leave on the sidelines. So I do think there's some big winners or losers. What I propose is we cover that. Excuse me. What I propose is we cover that in the after credit scene and we go into more detail because I think it's like a whole chunk of detail that we could go down there in a big rabbit hole.
All right. So do we want to talk about cards to look at if you loved all you've got? Are there other Team Tactics cards you think people should look at exploring and adding into their rosters?
I mean, I guess so. The main thing it did is increase damage output, right? So my first feeling there is if you still want that effect on your team, there's been some cards that are pretty strong, but have sometimes been kind of on the sidelines, not quite made it into people's 5 or 8, now 10 cards. The first one that immediately springs to mind is Blind Obsession. This is a card that does give you a good damage increase, also gives you some survivability benefits or detriments, depending on your situation. I think this card's stock goes up a lot, both with the change to All You've Got and with the change to Doom Prophecy that we'll talk about later.
I know we talked about it in our previous Sleeve It or Heave It, but I want to mention Smash again as an interesting way for some larger characters to gain additional dice there, right? Smash, obviously, you destroy a terrain feature that's smaller than you, and you gain dice equal to, I think, right, for the rest of your activation.
Yeah, exactly. That is a really powerful way to get multiple extra dice on multiple attacks. Once again, I think that's more replacing Doom Prophecy than All You've Got, but what you can't do now, right, is you can't multiply these things together. You can't have the damage increase multiplied by All You've Got. So if you just want to increase your output by as much as possible, you just kind of have to have the damage increase flat.
I think the other thing to look at here, though, and tell me if I'm wrong here, Pat, would be possibly replacing it with some more movement effects. I know we're probably already taking climbing gear, right? But if we're just trying to maximize activations the way you were with All You've Got, right? Getting your characters into position to double attack, obviously it is not nearly as efficient, but it's another way to kind of go about replacing these lists that got extremely powerful and potent activations off a single character.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think Climbing Gear is still my preferred card from that batch, but something like Tactical Analysis is always a card that has been strong and has seen a little bit of fringe competitive play that could go up in value with a change like this. I have to say, though, TT, one thing we might see is people just might not try to replace it, right? It might shift the meta in another direction where cards that have lost a lot of popularity as All You've Got has become ascendant are cards like Medpack and Patchup, right? Firstly, they were competing for restricted slots with All You've Got, which they're no longer doing. But secondly, if you expect that your characters are going to be dazed or KO'd before you get an activation to do something about it, then saving characters with Medpacks and Patchups just doesn't work, right? If I'm going to have double activation and kill your characters, there's nothing you can do about it with those cards. Now the damage is going to be a bit more paced, right? There'll be room to activate, and that will make those effects a bit more compelling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great point. And time will tell, and we'll dive into that a little bit more in the after the credit scenes. We have the only crisis card to either hit banned or restricted, Panic Grip City, as evacuation efforts continue. Obviously, it's one of those cards where you can really kind of gain a interesting advantage in the beginning. It's kind of leverage it straight to the win because of your ability to evacuate people. This has just been moved to the banned. This surprised me a little bit personally, Pat, because I personally had not seen this card much at all since it went on the restricted list. And then with the crisis changes, which will happen in a few episodes as well, we were going to see even less. But to just put the nail in the coffin, it's just banned now.
Yeah, and I think this is interesting as well for that reason, because I was not at all worried about this card, and I was surprised to see that it got upgraded to banned. I think if I were to speculate, the main reason for doing this is that when it becomes so difficult to play a crisis that it is restricted, there's such a high opportunity cost to taking it that you tend to only take it if you have a very specific plan with it. And that plan is still as abusive as ever, right? Like, if that card gets put on the restricted list because a plan with it is so unfun to play against or so powerful, like, your plan doesn't change if it's on the restricted list. The plan is the same. And I guess they figured that it was bad enough in those situations that it was just better that no one had to face it rather than maybe having to play against it 1 in 6 times against an optimistic opponent who wanted to try and use it.
Yeah, and to be clear, I don't think this changes anything to my point. Like, you saw it so rarely to begin with. Again, I personally was just surprised to see its inclusion here. So sorry, the all power drain team idea we came up with, which you'll hear in one episode due to time travel. Also, yeah, doesn't age terribly well. So we only have one update to the restricted list, and that is Bitter Rivals. No one is surprised here being added to the restricted list. An incredibly powerful and ubiquitous card here. I don't think this will decrease the amount we see Bitter Rivals. Do you, Pat?
I mean, I think it has to, doesn't it? Well, maybe not.
I guess. I don't think it'll be a large decrease. How's that, Pat?
I think there will be quite a significant decrease because the opportunity cost becomes a lot higher. Like, one of the reasons Bitter Rivals was so ubiquitous was the fact that you could put it in any team. And it was an example of a damage multiplier effect that comboed with all you've got, right? You reduced everybody's defenses, then you hit them all with beams, Medusa hair, whatever it might be. You did lots and lots of attacks at these targets that now had less defense dice to defend themselves with. The fact that that combo is gone, and the fact that Bitter Rivals now has an opportunity cost to take it, I do think you'll see it less. I think you have a choice on the BNR list, assuming you want to take 2 restricted cards, maybe you don't. But if you do, you have a choice between defensive options and offensive ones. And I think there'll be teams who would prefer the defensive choices. You're giving me a skeptical look, TT. Is your counterpoint here that Bitter Rivals is both offensive and defensive?
I mean, that is one of my counterpoints, and thank you for making it, Pat. I knew you'd get there eventually. I think the other thing to add on, I don't know, somehow your raspiness is transferred across the internet. I think the other thing I want to add on is the offensive options out of the restricted cards have basically vanished. All you've got's gone, and we'll get to it in a little bit, but Doom Prophecy isn't nearly as open as it used to. Yeah. So if you want a quote-unquote premier restricted offensive card, that is now Bitter Rivals. So I'll place a gentleman's bet with you. What do we say? I think it will be within 10% of the last season in the upcoming TTS season.
Okay, I will take the under on that. I think it will be less popular.
Okay, so if it's within 10%, I win. 10%, right? And if it's more than that, you win? So say it was taken in 70% of rosters. I'm saying it will be taken in no less than 60. Within 10% of the previous season.
Right, and I think it'll be less than that. So I think you could have 60 or higher.
Well, 10% is the bet. I don't remember
okay,
the
10. Okay, fine, fine. I'll take that bet, even though I don't know exactly what I'm agreeing to. But excellent. I think it'll be less popular. One of the reasons that I think it'll be less popular, and this is an example of the fact we're having all these changes at once, it's hard to quantify what the exact impact will be. But it's the crisis change, right? It's the fact that you have less control over the crisis map you're playing on, and you have to have a little bit more variety. Bitter Rivals is at its best in very tight crises that force conflict in the center. And I think you'll just see a little bit less of those. I'm not saying a ton less, but there'll be some teams that maybe took them in the past where they could get 2 out of 3 of them and they were happy with that. But they won't want all 3 of their crises to be that way. That might make them change their crisis selection. If you're playing spread out crises, Bitter Rivals is actually not that good, in my opinion. And certainly not good enough to compete with restricted cards. So I think the combination of competing with restricted cards and the crisis changes will push it down a little bit.
See, and I guess my counter argument is I think the increase in tactics card will kind of get it to float another spot. I think the point we disagree with is how it stacks up to the other restricted cards. And that maybe is a conversation for another time. Go ahead, Pat. I'm sorry.
No, I think you're right. Time will tell on this one. I mean, I think it really does depend a lot on your roster and your game plan. And it's going to be interesting to see how it settles out.
Yeah, it certainly will be. I mean, ages ago, I couldn't envision a roster that didn't have Brace for Impact, right? And I can't honestly tell you the last time I took Brace for Impact.
Well, you might be taking it now, TT.
Well, I'm playing Web Warrior, so I have actually been taking it. So that was a slight lie on my part there, so I apologize. But in addition to that, we've had some very interesting updates to cards, and I think the one we should start with is actually Doom Prophecy, because we've kind of alluded to this in the restricted section before. Doom Prophecy was actually the first card that AMG reworked, right? Redid the wording on it. For a long time, AMG wasn't doing that. Doom Prophecy came out, and the card just didn't work due to grammar. So they tweaked it with some fudging, and it worked. But now it's being made to an Asgard-affiliated card. So it must be played by an Asgard character. So this definitely changes a lot of the abusive things that Doom Prophecy was known for. Like, I've used it with Thor before, but that's just kind of because I was a diehard Avengers player, and this was, gosh, it was almost 2 years ago, Pat. Huge change to Doom Prophecy, right?
Yeah, massive. I love this change. The reason I love it is it's one of the more creative and unusual changes. I was not expecting a card on the restricted list to become an affiliated card. But I think it's a really cool change, because I think Doom Prophecy is a really cool card. It's a really cool design. It creates a lot of drama and tension in the game when you use it, and it has interesting downsides that other cards don't bring with them. And I love that this is a way to keep that cool stuff in the game while minimizing the abuse. And yeah, like, Doom Prophecy Carnage was pretty ridiculous, and I did not want to live in a world where I felt compelled to take Doom Prophecy Carnage in all my teams. So I'm really happy to see that this card can live on and we can still have the fun of using it, but in a much reduced capacity.
I'm torn. I've always been a big fan of Doom Prophecy, you know this, and I do like it being moved to affiliated only. I actually, personally speaking, which has absolutely nothing to do with the actual design of the game, I love when affiliations have really strong things. I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. I would much rather see 10 really cool affiliated things than 5 ubiquitous unaffiliated things. I personally just think it's more interesting. So I do like it being moved over. I find it curious it's still on the restricted list. It'll be interesting. I know it's a mutable thing. Maybe it won't be on there the next time. I was surprised to see it move to Asgard affiliated and maintain its restricted status. But generally, yeah, I'm a fan of it. I will miss the Carnage Doom Prophecy. I only got a few games with it. I loved both of them. We dojoed that list together when we came up with Spider-Foes list. So it'll be sad to see that go, but I do think, generally speaking, it's going to be healthy. And that's what I'm saying, where our option for, like, in my opinion, the two most powerful offensively minded cards have now had dramatic changes done to them with this release.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you that I would like to see this card be moved off the restricted list at some point now that it is affiliated only. It's an incredibly powerful card, but there's so many incredibly powerful affiliated cards, and I think we've seen that once they're gated behind an affiliation, that's absolutely fine. So, yeah, I agree with that. I also think it's nice to see something be given to Asgard, because they got a lot of power level decreases with these updates between their tactics cards and characters, and this is something that they got that works out as a benefit to them. They still get to play with this card, no one else does. It makes characters like Valkyrie look a lot more impressive in Asgard. She was always a good character. She took a little bit of a hit, but in Asgard, when she is your premier model to deliver Doom Prophecy, she looks very, very good indeed. So I like this change holistically with all of the other changes, helping to keep Asgard afloat.
I do think it's interesting how many good team tactics cards Asgard has now. And let's talk about another one of those, right? Let's talk about Rainbow Bridge. Mm-hmm. And Rainbow Bridge got a, it just got worse, right? If you're going across the Bifrost, you now cannot be holding an objective token, which is a massive change. But honestly, I think this is I think it's a great change. But to your point, Pat, this definitely, in one hand we give to Asgard, in one hand we take away.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think it's for the best, though. Like you said, I think it's very fair. We saw some abuses on the now banned Crisis that showed that if you can move your team so reliably so far with objectives, you can create some really unfun non-games where you just play keep away from your opponents. And Asgard was so good at doing that between their extra power generation and their leadership, keeping them alive for longer. I think it just makes sense. Plus, we've seen a functional reprint of this card in Convocation, right, with this exact change already. So yeah, it wasn't massively surprising that when they updated, they made the two cards the same.
No, not at all. And I do, I understand a lot of you like this. Again, a personal preference here. I like that this change, again, forces more engagement. You know, I never loved the, I have this thing, I'm going to run away, you have to chase him across the whole board kind of thing. So I think in general, it's a healthy change for the game. And like you said, Pat, I don't think this was really surprising because we knew it was out there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every time, with the exception of taking this card specifically to abuse Crises, I'm still going to play this card because this is one of those cards where just using it to move one character is worth it. It's a really powerful movement effect on just one character, and there'll be plenty of opportunities in a normal game to move one character within our subjective and get massive benefit from this. Plus, of course, sometimes you'll take the opportunity and you'll be able to move multiple characters still. So I think this card is still well worth taking. I would always have it in my 10 cards if I played Asgard. And maybe I would leave it on the sidelines in crises combinations where there's a lot of extracts, especially something like Spider Infected, where I'm likely to have a lot of my characters all holding one extract. Maybe then I leave it at home, but I'd still plan to play it in many games.
All right, so let's hit on the other affiliated card that was hit here, and that's Pentagrams of Farala, excuse me. It's ended up with a power increase here, and it's gone from costing 2 power to 3, which is a monstrous change. What do we think about the change to Pentagrams?
Yeah, I just want to spell this one out in case anyone is not really familiar with Defenders and how they use Pentagrams. But the reason this change is so monstrous, like you said, TT, is because at 2 cost, Doctor Strange with the Soul Gem could use this in the first round of the game. And now at 3 cost, there is no way that you can play this card in the first round. It's relegated to at the soonest being played in round 2. And even then, you would need a little bit of forethought and planning to facilitate that.
Yeah, so to be clear, Pentagrams of Farala is played during the power phase. So you don't have an opportunity to advance R&D. Mentioned that one intentionally to get the power over there because, again, it happens in the power phase. This really slows them down. And Pat, I know you've played more Defenders game than me. What does Defenders really do if it's not aggressive turn one plays?
Well, yeah, it's very different affiliation, right? And I feel really bad, honestly, for Defenders because they were always an affiliation where they have a very small amount of tactics cards, right? This is the only affiliated Defenders tactics card. So to see it take quite a big hit means they don't actually have that much going for them as an affiliation. It's basically Doctor Strange's leadership and this card. Now, because of that, in the past, they've been defined by pentagrams, right? Because pentagrams is literally the thing that they do that no one else could do. And it's a little bit awkward to ask the question, well, if you're not doing pentagrams, why are you playing Defenders? Because what are you signing up for? Mediocre leadership? Doctor Strange leadership is fine, but I mean, there's plenty of fine leaderships in the game. And now there's several other affiliations that are kind of themed to be along the lines of Doctor Strange. You've got Midnight Suns, where one of your tactics cards is even his dog, right? You've got Convocation, where you've got multiple different versions of Doctor Strange who are affiliated. So I feel like definitely this card is still the reason to play Defenders, but turn one plays are off the table, right? All of the stuff that Defenders did on turn one, which we've created many articles and episodes about from various different content creators, all of that stuff is crossed through. And they'll have to use the pentagram in a later round to try and leverage some sort of advantage with like maybe mass switching from one flank to another or get using it as like a pseudo charge effect for a powerful character.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how people do it, right? I'd be interested in like the separated seas where there's no middle point. Do you end up dropping the portal left to right or do something interesting that way? I do want to say, I think both you and I, Pat, right? I think we're both pretty high in the Defender roster. Like, yeah, it's a pretty compelling roster. It's just, again, like, why do you want to utilize that roster? But time will tell. If you're a patron, let us know in Discord what you think of it. And if you're not a patron, you can let Pat know on social media.
One thing I will say, TT, is we need to remember, once again, the changes are not in a vacuum. There's so many changes. Defenders have got some upgrades to some of their most powerful, expensive characters, right? Hulk and Ghost Rider got massive improvements with this round of changes, and they are some premier Defenders. So there are reasons to play Defenders. And
They got some new convocation models as well. A lot has definitely changed their pattern.
A lot. Yeah, you're right. And to the point about turn one plays, I mean, yeah, the Portals was the ultimate turn one play. It's gone. Can't do it on turn one, full stop. But, you know, a lot of other turn one plays have been reduced to power as well.
Yeah, and what a fantastic segue that is, Pat. Advanced R&D now requires the character to play it on their own activation. Which doesn't seem like a big change if you read it, but if you actually played a lot of variants R&D, it's a pretty monstrous change there.
Yeah, it's big for a couple of reasons. The main reason it's big is because the most common way this card is used competitively is to facilitate doing powerful things on turn one, right? And the reason why the timing change makes that worse is, firstly, it telegraphs what you're going to do, right? You spend an activation giving your power to other characters. That character's activation is probably not very good on turn one if they've given all their power away. They're probably just moving and sitting somewhere, right? They're not interacting. They're not doing anything. You're showing your opponent, I intend to do powerful stuff with exactly these characters on this part of the table. You don't have the flexibility of using it in a more reactive way, where you look for that opportunity where your character is going to activate and do something good. You immediately take the power from somebody who happens to have it and leverage it in that way.
Yeah, you also don't have the same opportunities to generate power on a character before they kind of have to disperse them. Yes. Don't get me wrong, the character itself can still move forward, generate their power, and kind of disseminate it. But again, just having the restriction on it just restricts, again, to Pat's point, right, the amount of flexibility you have here. I think Advanced R&D is still going to be a popular card. I think this is a good change for it to help bring the line a little bit. I don't anticipate it seeing nearly the usage numbers it used to. I actually think this one will have a more precipitous drop than Bitter Rivals.
Absolutely. I think this card is still good, but it goes from being one of the best cards of the game to being like a fine option. One of the other things that happens with its timing change is it slows down turn one plays. You can't, as your first activation of round one, do something outrageous with Advanced R&D to steal an objective, right? I can't activate my first character, move to the middle of the table, Advanced R&D, interact and teleport backwards, for example, right? That's no longer possible. So it will slow down some of the turn one shenanigans in terms of scoring, giving opponents a chance to react. I think that's excellent. I think it's a really good change for the health of the game and forces people to play more fairly. The flip side, though, to your point, is if you did have a plan that didn't require you to act first, you can still do that plan. So a classic example is Web Warriors. They love Advanced R&D just to let Miles and Amazing Spider-Man web swing, right? They may not have a specific plan for what they want to do with that web swing, but they just want to do it at some point in the first round. Well, Advanced R&D can still solve that problem for you. So I do think there'll be specific teams that are very happy to include it going forward.
Absolutely. And again, making unaffiliated cards more niche, less of a quote-unquote auto-include, I am all for, so I'm happy to see the change to Advanced R&D. We're getting into a few more niche cards here. Let's hit on Gamma Launch real quick. Gamma Launch has to be played in Hulk's activation now, and I think this just plays into exactly what you're saying here, Pat, right? They're limiting the amount of unanswerable things heading forward with Advanced R&D, and they're doing the same thing here now with the Gamma Launch, right? So Hulk's going to activate, throw someone forward. You're going to have a chance to respond because now it's on Hulk's activation instead of that model then immediately activating and doing stuff in the midfield objectives. So I do think this, I'm going to say, right, slows the game down a little just from in terms of activation when we're hitting things. I still think it's a fine change. We have to keep in mind, right, Hulk received a huge buff in general, even if he received a minor debuff today, which we're not going to talk about. I think the change to Gamma Launch is in line with the other things we've seen between Pentagrams and Advanced R&D.
Yeah, absolutely, it's in line. It stops that combination of using the card when you don't expect it to get the move plus the activation all in one. I think the card is still great, right? It's still an outrageously large amount of movement, and I think you can still do a lot of powerful things with throwing powerful characters on turn one or repositioning characters later in the game. There was perhaps the chance that with Hulk being so good now, this card might become ubiquitous. I think this change has made sure that's not going to be the case. I think this is a corner case card that has its moments. I would be happy to include it, but I'm not going to build my game plan around it.
I think that's very fair. So Up next, we have some power reductions on Ricochet Blast and Thunder Wave. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Pat. They each used to cost 2 per character, and now they each cost 1. Is that correct?
Correct. The cost has been halved, slashed.
Yeah, I mean, it's good.
It is good. Let me tell you, it's the cost. The difference between a 2-cost card and a 1-cost card in MCP is like night and day. It's a massive difference because of the fact that you get 1 power a turn on all your characters, right? It's a big deal when you could basically use these cards whenever you want, no matter the circumstance, compared to needing to plan ahead and save your power for them. And it makes the opportunity cost of playing them as opposed to using your other effects much less. We've talked about this in the Avengers episode recently, TT. I've been using a lot of Ricochet Blast, and new Ricochet Blast is awesome. Like the 1-cost Ricochet Blast, especially in combination with regular core set Iron Man's Friday AI, it's a monstrous effect. This card is really strong now.
Yeah, it is a good card. Let me be clear there. I'm sorry. I made a weird face, which you can't see because it's a podcast. I was going to quibble with it. It's a good card. I like the card. I struggle at times on where Captain America wants to be on the field.
Yep.
Because I've liked keeping him kind of range 3 or 4 away from people, but then like Ricochet Blast, sometimes I kind of need to dig a little deeper. But I do think it's a good card. Let's stop there. It's a good card. If you haven't tried it, you should try it. Not nearly as high on Thunder Wave as I am Ricochet Blast, but Ricochet Blast, I think, is a very solid card.
Yeah, it's good. It can do some powerful stuff, even in the first round of the game. It's not like an objective-stealing turn one play, but if people come forward, you can zap them with Ricochet Blast. So I like it a lot. Thunder Wave, I'm less high on for a couple of reasons, and I want to use it as an example of like some of the subtle but important nuances between cards that can dictate a lot about how powerful they are that might not be visible at first glance. Because at first glance, you could look at Thunder Wave and Ricochet Blast. You could think they're quite similar, right? They both require 2 characters to use. They both have 1 power cost. They both give you a different attack. And then you could say, okay, well, Ricochet Blast has more damage to 1 character, but Thunder Wave is a beam. It's a big beam. It can hit a lot of characters. Ignoring the actual output of the attack, right? I don't want to quibble about whether a beam is better than single target. It's going to depend on the situation. There's 2 reasons why Thunder Wave is way worse than Ricochet Blast. The first is the positioning requirement, right? The fact that Thunder Wave requires Thor and Captain America to be within range 1 of each other, right? That's such a small distance. And it's really awkward to set that up on the table because the characters don't naturally want to be within range 1. Okay, sure. If you're talking about Steve Rogers' Captain America, he might want to be within range 2 of Thor. But Thor is a very aggressive character who wants to be getting in there and smashing things quite often and doesn't necessarily want to be tethered to Captain America. So what it means is you can't enact your normal game plan and expect to have Thunder Wave available when you want it, which makes the power cost change a lot less impactful because you can't just throw in that Thunder Wave when you want. And we talked about Ricochet Blast. Yes, sometimes Captain America isn't in the spot you want, but I think it's easier in general to meet the positioning requirement for Ricochet than it is for Thunder Wave. The second is the opportunity cost to making this attack, because there's a big difference between giving up Iron Man's 4 dice Repulsor Blast to get a much better attack compared to giving up Thor's 6 dice strike with a wild size 4 throw to get a beam, or even giving up one of his area attacks, right? Ricochet Blast is just upgrading what Iron Man does. Iron Man does single target attack damage with a couple of wild effects. Ricochet Blast does this way better. So if you want Iron Man to zap people, Ricochet Blast will let you do a better job of it. Thor already has area effects, right? He can throw characters into each other. He's got an area 2 attack in God of Thunder. The beam is different, but it's not necessarily an upgrade to what he's doing. And because he's a 5-threat character, his normal attacks are already really powerful. So when you look at these 2 attacks and you say, okay, I'm not going to quibble over which is better. The problem is what you're giving up is very different. And you're giving up something much better on Thor to make this attack than you are on Iron Man.
Yeah, I think those are fantastic points. I also think that you just honestly see less of Thor nowadays. But to your point, Pat, right, he already has a range 5 attack and hammer throw. So yep. Could you theoretically be gaining an extra roughly range 2 off being within range 1 of Cap and measuring off Cap? Absolutely. But I feel like we're getting pretty nuanced there. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'll say is, like, it reads better than it plays. Because if this card was flipped, and I'm not an armchair developer, I don't think it's beneficial. If this was in Steve's activation, it's much easier to set that beam up, right? Where you can move Steve around and set the beam up. But this is in Thor's activation, and like you said, we are losing one of Thor's attacks, right? And again, for people that haven't played Thor, he has a 6-dice strike with a wild throw. He has a range 5, 5-dice attack that shocks automatically. Then he has an area 2-7 attack. So it's just, okay, that's neat, I guess. I just... Honestly, being within range 1 of people is just the reason I'm not using it. But all important things to point out, Pat.
Yeah, so I think this card is fine, don't get me wrong. I will certainly consider including it for fun. And I need to play it a bit more. I might come around to it. It might become... It's the kind of card where if I'm regularly playing Thor and Captain America together, maybe I take it for specific crisis maps, right? Maybe I take it so if I'm playing Gamma, I can throw more beams into the mix. Kind of like how with Doctor Strange, you sometimes take Seven Sons of Cinnabis as a beam option for specific crises. That could definitely happen. But yeah, it really depends how much we're going to play these two characters together. There's so many Avengers to choose from. I'm not personally playing Thor in my Avengers right now, but maybe in future.
No, that's an interesting talk. I don't think Thor's aged particularly well, but we can have that conversation another day.
I actually like Thor quite a lot. I think he's underrated. But, I mean, when you're getting new Avengers, like, at the rate of, what, one every 2 months? We're 2 years into the game now, there's just... How do I hold all these Avengers? It's too many Avengers.
So I think Thor is a fine character, let me be clear. I don't think he's anywhere near the bottom of the list. I just think that there are models that do his role a little bit better. And they're newer, so it's hard to honestly make room for them. We've talked about this before, right? The allure of new things is always strong with people.
Very strong, and I think that is the biggest challenge for poor Thor. He's no longer new and shiny.
All right, so to wrap up this episode, let's quickly sleeve it or heave it with all the different things that have happened here, Pat. I am just going to, we're going to rapid fire through these things. I'm going to name the card. You're telling me whether you're going to sleeve it or heave it. Ricochet Blast.
Okay. I'm sleeving that one hard. I've sleeved that one already, and it's not coming out of the sleeve. Love it.
Thunderwave?
Heaving it for now. Like I said, maybe one day, Thor. Maybe one day.
Still restricted, Asgard-only Doom Prophecy.
Sleeving it when I play Asgard.
Rainbow Bridge, but you can't take your baggage with you.
Yep, still sleeving it. I'm sleeving all three Asgard cards when I play Asgard, easily making those three into my 10.
Pentagrams of Frawler?
Heaving it? Trying to play Defenders without? Seeing how that feels? Probably at some point sheepishly coming back to it.
Advanced R&D?
Still sleeved. Still a good card for the right teams.
Bitter Rivals?
Definitely still sleeved. I will happily play this as one of my two restricted cards in a bunch of different squads.
And last but certainly not least, Gamma Launch?
Yeah, I'm going to sleeve it and try it. I don't know. I'm on the fence about this one. I've never been a big fan of Gamma Launch personally. I don't use it as much as some people, but I want to give it a go.
All right. So that wraps up the episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Before we go, though, Pat, I do have a song for you. I have absolutely no idea where we left off with the song bit. Because I don't remember exactly when we record them in the episodes, and we do, Pat and I record a couple episodes ahead of time. So this might seem out of order, but last I knew, Pat got all the songs right and we had a clean slate. Is that what you remember, right, Pat?
Sure, I'll take that. Yeah, definitely. I'm doing great.
Really, well, you got Carly Rae Jepsen, and you got the unofficial British National Anthem. Those are the last two song bits we did. All right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Is this just real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide. No escape from reality. Open your eyes. Look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy. I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go. Little high, little low. Any way the wind blows doesn't really matter to me. To me. Mama just killed a man. Put a gun to his head. Pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun. But now I'm gone and thrown it all away. Mama, didn't mean to make you cry. If I'm not back again this time tomorrow, carry on as if nothing really matters. All right, Pat, you know who sang that song for me?
That is a classic. That is Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen.
Excellent. Good job. I wasn't sure if that made it over the seas. I don't know. We've had some interesting...
What?
We've had some... You didn't get 98
Queen
degrees.
Is a British Queen is a British band. You know that, right?
Oh, is that why they're named Queen? I did not know that. Are they really a British band?
Yeah, they are.
Queen is
like
a British
so many
band,
great
formed
rock
in
bands.
London. Really? What other rock band came out of... I can't think of any.
Really? None? Okay. Well, have I got some lyrics for you. Just you wait till next week.
Oh, I'm excited. If we can turn this bit around, that'll be great. So we do want to thank each and every one of you for listening here. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We're excited to see what you are putting forth with the new Banned and Restricted and these new team tactics card change. We have a pretty cool after the credit scene coming up. Patreon suggested it. We're talking about characters and affiliations that have changed, maybe become a little more viable after the banned and restricted change here. That was suggested by Death Fox. If you're interested in listening to the after the credit scene, it's like a 15-20 minute bonus episode we do every week. You can check that out at patreon.com/across the Bifrost. We want to thank each and every one of you for listening, regardless of whether you're a patron or not. Until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a in a lullaby, somewhere across the Bifrost skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.